This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, 60 minutes of nonstop talk on the Rich Cioli podcast.
There are more crackdowns in New Jersey, more restrictions put on us by Mao Zedong Murphy, more totalitarian dictates that make no sense, by the way. And how do we hold China accountable for what China has done? And by the way, can we trust them? No, we can't. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. The Cioli Show on Twitter at Rich Cioli, Facebook.com/Cioli Show. This is an hour of nonstop talk. The question I have for you throughout this hour, call in anytime you like. Are you doing anything to better yourself during this pandemic quarantine? Because according to a survey I saw, 3 in 5 adults plan on self-improving during the lockdown. All right, 3 in 5. The other 2 just want to be left alone and day drink in peace. But 3 in 5 want to do something to improve their lives, become a better person, start exercising, become a cook, or whatever. Are you doing anything like that to better your life during this? You always see those kind of feel-good stories out there, you know? 855-839-1210. We're also apparently getting gripped by pandemic dreams and nightmares. According to a story from the Miami Herald, that vivid pandemic dreams and nightmares are keeping the nation awake during the coronavirus outbreak. So are you getting bad dreams described as vivid, weird, occasionally horrifying? Examples are being shared via social media, hashtag pandemic dreams. That's something that that bothers you too. You're having trouble sleeping during all this. Let me know. 855-839-1210. Here's the thing. There are people who are going to lose more sleep. The unemployment number is going to be announced today, and it's going to be bad. This economy is on life support right now, and it is critical. And yet, in New Jersey, the governor yesterday decided that he's going to shut down more construction projects. More construction projects are going to be shut down that he doesn't consider to be essential. And the totalitarianism of this guy matters. You know, I retweeted something that one of the Cioli Army members, smartest and most loyal audience in radio, of course. The point was, and we got to start waking up to the fact that these gubernatorial elections matter just as much as POTUS. And these governors have enormous powers. We don't realize it until there's a crisis, but it's the governors who have the power during these kind of emergencies. The president doesn't really have much outside of what he can do with the borders. But beyond that, this is the governors. And we've seen now with Murphy and Wolf and Cuomo and Cardi in Delaware. I mean, we've seen the extent of their various different styles. But the one component is true. They're all the boss. They're in charge. They're the boss. There's no committee. There's no one to get approval. They don't have to go to the legislature and ask. During these moments, the governor is supreme. And the legislature can try to rein them in. Doesn't seem like it does much good. So you gotta keep that in mind when these things go forward. This won't be the last time we have this, and it's probably not going to be the last time that an emergency is used for people to gain power. That is the truth. And some of the stuff that's going on is just crazy. Now, I talked about this story yesterday in Colorado. This dad is playing T-ball with his wife and his 6-year-old daughter. Cops come, and they cuff the guy and put him in the backseat of a cop car. The Brighton City in Colorado, the Brighton City Police has offered an apology to the resident. Let me read you what they said. Today, acting city manager Marv Falkenberg reached out to Brighton resident Matt Mooney by telephone in an effort to arrange a meeting in person with Falkenberg and Brighton Police Commander Frank Acosta to demand an apology, offer an apology by Mr. Brighton, by the Brighton Police Department in person, excuse me. Falkenberg conveyed an apology, however, and the resident has declined the offer for an in-person meeting. On Sunday at about 4:30 p.m., officers were dispatched to respond to a complaint from a concerned citizen. This is what I mean about dropping dimes on people. This is why I say let's not become a nation of snitches here, okay? Officers were dispatched to respond to a complaint from a concerned citizen about a large group of people gathering at Donaldson Park. Upon arrival, officers encountered a group of about 12 to 15 people who appeared to be playing softball. Although the officers asked them to disperse due to the park being closed, which was incorrect, disbursement was needed due to the state's public health order regarding group gathering. The Brighton Police Department is currently conducting an internal investigation into what led to officers detaining Mr. Mooney while responding to the complaint. While the investigation sorts through the different versions of what took place by witnesses who were at the park, it is evident there was an overreach by our police officers. All officers are required to interpret several layers of state public health orders and local closures as they change. There may have been a misunderstanding about the park closure. It is imperative that we improve communication with our frontline first responders so they are up to date on the latest rules in place regarding COVID-19 for addressing public safety. Now, there's a little twist to this story, too, by the way, I should mention. The man... And the video was clearly, it shows him with his wife and his daughter. He wasn't part of a big group. But the dad here in this whole thing, former police officer. And that's just another thing that makes people even more outraged, a former Colorado State Patrol trooper. And he said he was handcuffed in front of his six-year-old daughter on a near empty softball field Sunday by Brighton police officers enforcing social distancing rules. 33 years old. He told ABC News he walked with his wife and daughter from their home to a nearby park Sunday to play softball. We're just having a good time, not near anybody else. The next closest person is at least 15 feet away from me and my daughter at this point. He says to ABC News they arrived soon after the police were called and telling him the others in the area to leave because the park was closed. He said he told officers he was familiar with the posted rules and believed that he and his family were in compliance and practicing proper social distancing. He said he refused to provide his identification when officers asked for it because he had not broken any law. Well, they didn't like that idea, he said. So then they proceeded to make a threat against me saying, if you don't give us your identification, if you don't identify yourself, we're going to put you in handcuffs in front of your six-year-old daughter. Mooney said officers handcuffed him and placed him in a patrol car for about 10 to 15 minutes while they phoned a supervisor for guidance. The incident was captured on cell phone footage. So he's a former cop and he gets locked up. I mean, I should say handcuffed and put into the back of a police car. Now, this kind of stuff is happening more and more, and we can't let it happen because we can't become this kind of a country. All right. Defeating the virus is very important, but we don't want to defeat the Constitution and our common sense either. We don't want to do that. We don't want to become that company, that country. And yet more and more, I'm seeing stories like this that are happening, and it's becoming very, very disturbing. So keep sending them to me. Keep letting me know when you hear stories like this, because it's really important that we stay united in this. This is not going to be good for morale. But you got that, Mousey Murphy. He's out there threatening a $1,000 fine for anybody who breaks social distancing rules. $1,000 fine. If you go to a park today in Jersey, you're a criminal. Remember that $1,000 fine. It's like a class 4 misdemeanor, I believe. And you'll be fine. But you could go to jail. And the fines could go up to as high as $10,000. And you could also go to jail. So just keep that in mind as you think about the freedom that we're all enjoying right now, but not really enjoying. Then there's on the national front some other kooky ideas that are being proposed. Like, for example, the Attorney General Bill Barr was discussing a number of different things. One of the questions that Laura Ingraham asked him was about the idea of having some sort of a virtual quarantine certificate. Cut number 8.
You're right in the general sense that there is a power for the government to take extraordinary steps in genuine emergencies. That obviously creates a slippery slope. What do you call an emergency? And I am concerned that we not get into the business of declaring everything an emergency and then using these kinds of sweeping extraordinary steps. But given where we were back in March, I think the president made the right decision. I think the president's made the right decisions for the right reasons. I think against the advice of many people, he closed the borders. And I think when the history of this is written, that's going to have saved a lot of lives. I think that given the uncertainty that surrounded this and the possibility that it was so contagious that it would swamp our healthcare system, he supported the appropriate moves for a limited period of time.
So I'm not sure, Greg, if that's the right cut or not. That was him discussing the virtual quarantine, the quarantine certificate, I believe, that I sent over. Do you have that one, too?
No, that's not what you sent over to me.
All right. See if we can find that, if you would, for me. Thanks. So some of these ideas on the federal level are just absurd. The other idea today is to have a national database of people who've tested positive for the coronavirus. This way we can track them. Now, that's also a bad idea because it's easily to be abused. So easy to be abused. Now, I pointed this out yesterday. We're living in such crazy times. I don't know who to believe sometimes. I really don't. I don't know who to believe anymore. There was a story that came out on Good Morning America. Intelligence report warned of coronavirus crisis as early as November. And so I tweeted that out. And I got all kinds of people asking me, do you really believe the mainstream media in this story? As the agency that's mentioned here denied it. And I said, you know, it's really strange. I don't know who to believe anymore. Do I believe the mainstream media? Do I believe China? Do I believe the same intelligence community that spent years going after the president and saying there was Russian collusion? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know who to believe anymore. But according to the story from Good Morning America, as far back as November, U.S. intelligence officials were warning that a contagion was sweeping through China's Wuhan region. Now, if that's true, and the virus was going back to November in Wuhan, that means it probably started more like in October. So I know a number of people who've said that they thought they got sick over the winter. They thought it was just a flu. And now they're looking back going, did I have the coronavirus? Maybe you did. You may have. It's very possible you may have because this virus could have been even older. But, you know, it brings up a point, right? This report comes out and everybody immediately goes, oh, it's fake news. And then the agency turns around and goes, yeah. No. We didn't do that. We never put out any such report. The National Center for Medical Intelligence. But, you know, the National Center for Medical Intelligence is part of the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, which was the same one that's run by that liar James Clapper for years. And the DIA spent so much time trying to warn America about Russia collusion in the presidential election. So I just have a hard time trusting a lot of these entrenched bureaucrats with anything. I just have a really hard time trusting any of these people. And so do I think that there was an intelligence brief that landed on President Trump's desk? No, absolutely not. Do I think that maybe they were alerted to something going on in China even earlier than we think? Certainly possible. The real question is, did they take it seriously? The other question is, were they too concerned about, remember, this was impeachment. This wasn't Ukraine going on. You know, was our intelligence community, again, too worried about how they could get rid of the president using this phone call and not worried about the virus over there? So, I mean, just keep this in mind. I mean, we live in crazy times, but before you just instantly dismiss mainstream media reporting and side with the federal bureaucracy of entrenched intelligence community, remember who those people are there too. That's what I mean. I don't know who to believe. Do I believe China when they say the virus came out in January? Do I believe this, the Good Morning America, the fake news ABC News with the unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos? Or do I believe the entrenched intelligence community that in the fall was too busy with all of their people leaking and whistleblowing and putting stuff out there and turning on the president after years of going after him for Russia? I don't know. That's the hard part. I don't really know. And I certainly know this. I know we can't trust China. I mean, of all of it, I know that. We can't trust China. Because there's a story that thousands of people were leaving Wuhan even after the city apparently reopened, and they said there were no cases. And China is already rewriting the history of COVID-19, even as the pandemic unfolds. Politico magazine had a story about this. And basically, the whole idea of it is that as Wuhan officials went about business as usual, which included a disastrous Lunar New Year banquet, which attended about 40,000 families, many more thousands around Wuhan were infected, hundreds dead or dying. And all this was happening in January, and Chinese state media regularly tweeted propaganda and described as fake news. They started calling all these various, they have Global Times, they have China, Xinhua News, People's Daily, China Daily, China Global Television Network. All this is owned by the state. Global Times has 1.7 million followers on Twitter. China Xinhua News, 12.6 million followers. People's Daily, 7.1 million. China Daily, 4.3 million. China Global Television Network reaches 14 million people. In China, they have something called the Ministry of Foreign Affairs Information Department. It has 287,000 followers, and they tweeted a link to a conspiracy website alleging the U.S. was responsible for the virus. If you remember that was something that China was trying to push out as well. Now, what all of these state-run media entities are coming out and saying is everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everybody's back to work. Life is opening up. Everything is fine. Everybody's happy. Except the problem is people are fleeing Wuhan again, the center of the outbreak. Why is that? Global Research cites the Fudan University quote in the Global Times, where a professor stated that global virologists, including the intelligence agencies, were tracking the origin of the virus. Also of interest, the Chinese government did not shut the door on this. The news report stated that they are encouraged to actively partake in discussions, but preferably in a rational fashion. In China, that is meaningful. If the reports were rubbish, the government would clearly state that and tell people not to spread false rumors. The final piece of evidence in Global Research's March 4th article headlined, Taiwan virologists suggest the coronavirus originated in the U.S. Right? That was the headline. Taiwan virologist. And includes an embedded video of a Taiwan television show identified as This Is Not News, and a screenshot of a man with a pointer giving a colorful lecture about the origins of the virus. Turns out the man in the video is a top virologist and pharmacologist who performed a long and detailed search for the source of the virus, according to the video in the article. Except the man in the video, whom the report does not name, is not a virologist at all. He is a politician from the pro-Beijing New Party and a member of the Taipei City Council, who before entering politics full-time in 2002 was a pharmacology professor. This is what I mean. This is the kind of nonsense propaganda that China puts out all the time. And they're doing it again. They're doing it all over again with their social media, trying to rewrite the history of the coronavirus, rewrite how this all started. And then also, by the way, to start telling everybody that everything's fine again. you got to really think hard about the fact that if this virus comes back, like I've heard different people say, we could be doing all this all over again in December. We'll know based on what happens in China. We'll know based on what happens in Wuhan. And I don't trust them.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
All right. 855-839-1210 is our number today. Let's see here now. Let's find out some of the other updates going on. The question I see here, let's see now, is whether or not the political race is over and we're in fact now have Bernie Sanders as the de facto Democrat nominee. Now, I know some of you think that perhaps it's not over yet, that Andrew Cuomo will rise up and become the Democrat nominee. I know certainly Democrats wish that. They're still doing the Cuomo versus Cuomo thing, even though the lesser Cuomo is recovering from the coronavirus at home. The Gov goes on the show and the two of them still do this back and forth nonsense. The two of them, the Love Gov and the Lesser. Take a listen. Cut 12.
My decision is, and as I posted today very early before anybody else responded to the call that you put out, I'm staying home for my mother because I love her. And at her age, she's uniquely vulnerable to the virus. And that's why making the move out of the house that Christina and I made was 100% our own, and we did it early. Who are you staying home for? Because I'm staying home for my mom.
The whole campaign is dedicated to my mother. And I said that first thing this morning when I posted my picture. Who are you staying at home for? Yeah,
you're right.
My mother. I'm staying home for my mother.
Oh, you're staying at home for your mom, too. Isn't it weird, though, after I just said it?
No, I went first. I had my picture at my press conference saying I'm doing it for my mother. And yes, because it's a point that I want people to understand. If you don't want to stay home for yourself,
there's me with mom right now.
Then, yeah, well, I had my picture this morning while you were still sleeping.
Can I ask a quick question here, by the way? Greg, are they doing this every night now? Greg, are you there?
It's a regular feature.
They're here once. It's once a week they do it.
They do this now.
Yeah.
Not every night, thank God.
I had my mic muted. Sorry about that.
That's right. So it's a regular feature, Dawn, you're saying?
Yeah, it's a regular feature that they kind of promote to brothers Cuomo.
I mean, is this good television? Are people liking this or what?
I don't know. I mean, what do you think, Greg?
Apparently, Cuomo's ratings are up. I don't know if it's because he came on with the COVID, diagnosis and people wanted to hear what he would say, but apparently his ratings are up.
All right, so let's understand now. He was number 17th at 9 p.m. for cable news.
He's 12th now.
Well, he's 12th now. That's huge.
Yeah, but everybody's numbers are
up. He's still getting beat by Bears Social Distancing, the new show on Nat Geo, which is amazing. Yes, Dawn, everybody's numbers are up?
Yeah, everybody's numbers are up because you have a captive audience. It's like, you know, it's as if we were right now, if we were in the morning rush and, you know, I-95 had an accident or something, you have a captive
audience. There's six cars on the road right now.
Right now. But if you know what I mean? So I'm just saying it's like that. You have a captive audience. You look at everybody's ratings across the board, not just in news, but especially all the shows, even primetime shows that were down, they're now all up.
You know what I've realized, too, is that all these news shows that they're doing the Skype, you know, the Skype thing and everything. Do you realize how bad some of this stuff looks on high definition television?
Yes.
You notice that, right?
Yes, 100%.
I've actually at one point, I'm like, do I need to adjust my TV here or what's going on? But I realize it's just that they're doing all these remote interviews and people, they don't have the HD makeup, right, Dawn? They don't have the HD cameras, but they're transmitting it still on the HD signal.
Yes.
So then they come out and you go, but you were cute in the morning. Like, what, you know, like, what's going on here?
Yeah. So you get to see people. I mean, some of it's interesting because it's like a reality TV thing where, you know, Carson Daly is on, you know, his kids are giving him a haircut outside or, you know, that sort of thing. So I think it's fun for now. I think moving forward, you've been there, done that, you know, done that.
He put a thing of his kids cutting his hair?
Yeah.
Wow, that's riveting, huh?
Yeah, riveting television. That's what's going on.
I should do my Flowbee. I should get my Flowbee out later and do that. That'll get some looks, right?
That would definitely go viral.
Jimmy Fallon actually has the best. He started it a few weeks ago where his two little daughters are in the shot with him, and he's trying to do a monologue, and they're interrupting him and stuff like that. I think he's handled it the best out of all of them. Stephen Colbert kind of doesn't, like, he's just, it's a bland background and there's a delay with guests and it's just, you know, I think Jimmy Fallon out of all of them is handling.
They should probably just stop doing those shows for a while. Wasn't Bernie Sanders, he was on last night with Kimmel, right?
Was he on with Kimmel?
Yeah, I think he was on with one of them last night.
I'm not sure.
After he dropped out. And, you know, it's awkward. I mean, he's doing it on Skype and, you know, you look back and forth and, you know.
There's delays and like.
Yeah, it's just, I don't think it's good TV, but 855-839-1210. Of course, I'll get to the burn. I'm feeling the burn, no doubt about that. But here's the cut of the Attorney General Bill Barr. So the question was these quarantine certificates that people would have to have and certificates for vaccines and everything like this. And then the privacy implications of all this. And I got to give Bill Barr credit because I've always been very fearful of him in times like this being the kind of guy that would want to seize power. But to his credit, the Attorney General of the United States is warning of that kind of seizure of government power. Take a listen.
Bill Gates, the Gates Foundation, are in favor of developing digital certificates that would certify that individuals, American citizens, have an immunity to this virus and potentially other viruses going forward to then facilitate travel and work and so forth. What are your thoughts from a civil libertarian point of view about these types of what some would say tracking mechanisms that would be adopted going forward to reopen our broader economy?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about the slippery slope in terms of continuing encroachments on personal liberty. I do think during the emergency, appropriate, reasonable steps are fine.
But a digital certificate to show who has recovered or been tested recently, or when we have a vaccine of people who've received it. That's his answer in a Reddit Ask Me Anything. They had a little forum.
I'd be a little concerned about that and the tracking of people and so forth, generally, especially going forward over a long period of time.
Yeah, you know, these kind of ideas that come out, I mean, some places are talking about ankle bracelets to monitor people that have tested positive. Other places are making their addresses public so that people can know. We're destroying privacy laws. HIPAA laws are going right out the window here. All of this stuff, this back and forth with this, we got to be very careful of this stuff as we go forward. We really do. We got to be very careful before we lose even more liberty. And the China issue, you know, I keep bringing up China because I don't want us to become like them. They were not able to stop this outbreak with all of their totalitarian practices. So totalitarianism doesn't stop the outbreak. So let's not become like China. Rhonda is in Berlin. Rhonda, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I have a puppy, German Shepherd, who is a wild beast, and she needs to run. So every day I usually take her to this one area, since all this has been going on, where it's an open field and no one's ever there. And I let her run and I throw balls for a couple hours to get it out of her system. And I have a little pug. He comes along. Well, yesterday, for the first time, there was a big gate across the way that you enter in, the driveway. And it said, do not enter, park closed. Well, I was just infuriated, you know, because really there is nothing there. So I drove around it and I parked and I just went out there and started throwing balls. Well, I saw this one car driving by very slowly, like peering at me, and their windows are down. And I just felt like saying, excuse me, are you a Democrat? Because I knew within a few seconds something was going to happen, and I was right. So these two big vehicles start pulling in. One says Ambassador of Parks, and then the other one was police officer in his vehicle. And they both got out, you know, very stern, and my dogs are jumping up on them and wanting to play. And they just completely ignored my little guys. With that, they proceeded to reprimand me. And I did ask them, I said, I was just wondering, is America now like communist? Like, what is going on? Because there's nothing right here in
what
this
park. What did they say? What did they say?
He just looked at me like, how dare you? Mm-hmm. And then I asked them, I said, also, I was just wondering, do you guys like Governor Murphy? And then the ambassador proceeded to get in his truck, and he left. And I was left with the officer. And the officer said to me, why were you so rude to him? I said, I'm not being rude. I'm very serious about this. Like, what is going on in our country? This is crazy that I can't come into a park with my dog and throw balls.
Yeah.
So with that, he started walking to his vehicle. And I said, wait a minute. Are you going to write me a ticket? He said, well, I really have to. I said, excuse me? I said, wait, we have to talk. Because I said, when you go down into your corridor, there is a painting there that I did of your canines, or of your canine. This was like a couple years ago. It's an oil painting that I did for them for free. And he said, oh, yeah, I do remember you. And so he proceeded to just walk back to me, and he said, okay, all right, I'm not going to give you a ticket, but can you please just obey the rules for now? So,
well, you got lucky. I mean, a lot of other people would not be so lucky. They'd probably get the ticket. Thanks for the call, Rhonda. I appreciate it. 855-839-1210. There's a lot of that going on. Doxing people with the new coronavirus, making diagnosed and suspected patients wear ankle monitors. Some states are taking all the wrong steps to slow the spread of COVID-19. Reason.com has this piece. How about potential patients unable to get tested or awaiting test results? In countries that have quickly and effectively slowed the spread of the new coronavirus, authorities have subjected residents to what many Americans would deem extreme and invasive test and trace measures. Some are opt-in, like Singapore's Trace Together app. In South Korea, officials rely on tracking methods citizens can't opt out of, such as cell phone location data and electronic purchases. Meanwhile, China requires everyone to download an app that displays a color-coded contagion risk level. These places tend to be pretty upfront about freedom and security trade-offs. In the U.S., however, authorities often pay lip service to liberty and avoid more moderate safety measures while simultaneously making brave new forays into violating people's privacy and civil rights. In Kentucky, people who tested positive for COVID-19 and those merely suspected to be ill have been told not to leave their homes, even with precautions, for 14 days. Good advice. But in practice, some people live alone and need food. Some people may live in a remote area where walks won't endanger anyone, and so on. Nonetheless, patients and those they live with who leave home for any reason face judge-mandated isolation orders and a GPS ankle monitor in some parts of the Bluegrass State. In Jefferson County, home to Louisville, health administrators have requested court orders and ankle monitors for at least four people. The first, a 66-year-old man who left his home after being diagnosed, but before receiving a court order to stay at home. After that, two people who lived together got the same treatment, even though only one had been diagnosed with COVID-19. One was ordered confined after taking a walk. One was ordered confined based on a phone call where they were thought to be out of the house. It appears that in Louisville, Kentucky, COVID-19 patients and their family members are being closely tracked even before being given an explicit order to stay in. In Texas, city leaders came close to requiring an Abilene Christian University professor to wear an ankle monitor when he was awaiting his test result. The city manager said this had in fact happened and later said otherwise. In some places, and likely more soon, health authorities are giving the addresses of all people diagnosed with COVID-19 to 911 dispatchers to be shared with cops, firefighters, and emergency responders should any be called to a coronavirus patient's address. In Northern Kentucky, dispatchers have been instructed to give police a heads up if they're headed out to talk with a person at an address where a confirmed COVID-19 patient lives. In Oklahoma, the governor signed an executive order last week saying his state can share patient addresses with medics and law enforcement, despite it normally being barred by medical privacy law. Massachusetts has been doing this statewide since the second week of March, Alabama since March 23rd. Police unions in Minnesota, Illinois, and New Jersey are now pushing for the same disclosures. At first blush, the rationale, police need protection from a contagious disease, makes sense. But this could be said about so many diseases, which is why police and medics already take precautions. And with huge numbers of COVID-19 patients being asymptomatic or taking days or weeks to develop symptoms, police officers should currently be taking extra precautions around everyone anyway. Montgomery County, Ohio Sheriff Rob Streck, whose department is not seeking addresses of patients, told reporters, "We've been dealing with people who've had infectious diseases for years that we didn't know about because of confidentiality rules. Providing police with patient addresses risks extrajudicial surveillance and harassment and patient identities getting out into the wider communities." Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker has been taking heed from local media and health officials for not requiring the release of city and town specific demographic data on COVID-19 patients. Georgia keeps an online list of the age, sex, and county of every COVID-19 patient who has died. New Jersey does the same thing. COVID-19 patients and those they live with aren't the only ones facing privacy invading hoopla right now, of course. A lot of locales are instituting coronavirus curfews, even though these make little sense beyond security theater. The virus isn't less likely to spread during daytime hours. All the curfew does is ensure everyone has less time and space in which to do the socially distanced exercise and essential errands. Remember, I've been mentioning that, right? The whole idea that everything shuts down by 8 p.m. makes no sense because if you could go out past 8 o'clock, you probably would encounter less people. But now everybody has to do the same things all at once in a limited amount of time, which actually then and less places to go, which raises the idea that you might come in contact with somebody, not less. And this goes on and on. In New Orleans, authorities recently announced that anyone outside between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. will have to present a permission slip from their employer or else be given a citation. To alert citizens it's time to get inside, police in the Louisiana city of Crowley played the siren from the movie The Purge. Played that for you the other day. So far, we're not hearing too many stories of police overreach on curfews and stay-at-home orders. It's in everybody's best interest to get voluntary compliance, and most of us are trying to approach it that way, said Art Acevedo, president of the Major Cities Chiefs Association. Chuck Wexler, executive director of the Police Executive Research Forum, told USA Today that while the best outcome is to get people to voluntarily comply, we're just on the front end of this thing. I fear the public's patience is going to be stretched as time goes on. It certainly will. There's no doubt about it, especially when you've got to put the officers at risk to go and issue tickets to a dad playing with his kids in a park. To the extent that cops are likely to take this out on COVID-19 patients and curfew violators in their communities, their ire would be misplaced. If police can't get the personal protective equipment they need, then their own departments and governments are to blame. It's certainly that we want to avoid sick cops, community spread, and more police overreach. And we should be thinking about how to create social distancing between certainly police officers and their communities. And I mentioned this with the woman who was pulled over for speeding. The cops have to come to her window, get her license, I assume, and all of this. And now you're risking a spread. So these things should only happen when it's absolutely necessary. And unfortunately, we're hearing more and more stories where it's not. And then all of the privacy implications, databases, and why not just put a giant C on everybody's home, the letter C, if you've tested positive for the coronavirus, so your friends know, your neighbors know, everybody stays away from you. I mean, are we that far off from that?
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
All right. So, Dawn, are you trying to better yourself in all of this? Are you doing anything, new habit, new resolution, anything?
Yeah, I had said I've been, you know, just trying to work out, and really since December, though, but now just kind of beefed it up, because the problem is, as we see online, it's either about the White House and watching, you know, listening to Zeoli, well, then you go to watch the briefing, or you're looking at cooking. What's everybody cook? What's the latest thing? People are making bread. They're making tacos. So we're all, I think everybody's eating more.
Oh, we're all going to get fat, don't you think, from this?
And yes. And ironically, they came out with a report and said that, unfortunately, obesity is one of the things that puts us at higher risk for coronavirus.
Yeah, I got on the scale today. I went, ooh. You know, the day drinking during the day doesn't help either,
Stop.
By the way.
You are not.
You know, right? I mean, there's some calories in all this booze, too.
Yeah, it's all sugar. It goes right to your gut. Don't do it. Drink water. I've been doing yard work because it's an excuse to get out.
That's good.
Like, oh,
that's
I got all those weeds. Got to, you know, take care of the weeds out there.
Yeah, you got it. You got to do it. You got to do the yard work. Greg, are you looking at any self-improvement during this whole ordeal?
Actually, yeah. I've actually stopped. I mean, for the most part, I've stopped drinking over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I think I've had one beer, and it was on Saturday night for a this will show what a nerd I am, for a WrestleMania Zoom party. A bunch of my friends got together and we watched WrestleMania on Zoom. I had a beer for that, but that was the first beer I've had in like a month. So,
oh, that's great.
When that Zima hit your lips, was it really good?
It was amazing. It was amazing. The first sip was just, oof, knocked me on my butt.
So giving up drinking when everybody's turning to drinking to get them through this, it's impressive.
Well, I'm just trying to, you know, I have a lot of anxiety over this, so I'm just trying not to use drinking or anything like that as a crutch, you know what I mean, when I probably could. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, Dawn, Greg takes his temperature every hour on the hour.
Stop.
Every hour.
Not every hour, but I did take
That's
it
why
probably.
His mic wasn't off before. He had the thermometer in his mouth.
Yeah.
Taking his temperature.
He's the exergen, so you don't have to, you know.
That's what I said. Dude.
Yeah,
the
no,
exergen.
I have one of those low energy CVS things that takes about 2 minutes to, you know, get your temperature, and you have no idea if it's actually, you know, accurate or not.
Because it's not. how about you, Bill? Any self-improvement, millennial?
Well, I actually kind of went the opposite of Greg. My neighbor offered me a couple of beers when I was doing, like Dawn was saying, yard work the other day, and I've started to turn into an IPA guy, something that I promised I never would be. But
an IPA guy, meaning that you drink India Pale Ales?
Yes, yes. I tried not. I never got into it, but now that we're all quarantined and you can't really, you got to try new things. So I started trying IPAs.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's
good.
Your big self-growth. I tried IPAs.
That's what
good
I got.
For you. I think this is really going to make you a better person.
Yeah, Greg's given up drinking, so I'll take the reins on this.
I love that Bill's big foray into something new is trying a different kind of beer.
Yeah.
Like, well, I've been really putting off this pale ale, but now's the time. I think I'll go all in.
Well, if it's the end of the world, why not?
Why not?
You know?
Let's see here now. Dr. Fauci said people should just forget about shaking hands even after the coronavirus threat is over. I totally agree. The president has said this a few times, too, and I don't want to ever shake another hand again. I think if we can just get over, no more with the shaking hands. Can we all agree on that as a nation?
Yes, agreed.
Yes.
Constitutional amendment?
Mm-hmm.
No.
We can do it.
Absolutely.
Cut two.
We're curious, what do you think it's going to look like for people? What will the routine behavior be for people 3, 6, 9 months from now?
Yeah, I think for a while there's going to be clearly some attention to physical separation, but not to the extent where it's as disruptive of the normal social and business type interactions.
Are you confident we ever get back to the normal that we knew just a few months ago?
It depends on what you mean by normal. I think what we're going to have embedded and imprinted in us forever is the realization realization that something as catastrophic as what the world is experiencing now can happen. And just as a society, just forget about shaking hands. We don't need to shake hands. We've got to break that custom. Because as a matter of fact, that is really one of the major ways that you can transmit a respiratory-borne illness.
There you go. I'm all in. No more shaking hands. Enough.
Amen. Amen.
We'll start patting each other on the butt. How about that?
Oh, there you go. What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong there?
Hey, everyone, welcome back to the new building.
I'm sure our company, woke company, would love that. Donald Trump Jr. wanted Tiger King to get a pardon. So he was on with Jim and Sam. Who is Sam, by the way, Greg?
Sam Roberts. He used to be Opie and Anthony's producer, but now he does a SiriusXM show with Jim Norton.
Who's been on this show before. So Jim and Sam had Donald Trump Jr. on their SiriusXM show, and DTJ was asked about pardoning the Tiger King. Take a listen.
Tiger King, Don Jr. But
dude, I literally watched it in two sittings.
It's so great. It's so great. Have you heard?
It's pretty amazing. By the way, like the thing I posted on Instagram this morning was a Joe Exotic sort of Donald Trump meme. So
well, he's asking for a presidential pardon. Like, do you know that he wants a presidential pardon?
I've heard that. I didn't. Is that true, though, or is that just someone like coming up with it?
It sounds true.
It sounds like something Joe would ask for. Yeah,
it does. Yeah,
you guys really want it to be true, don't you?
Very
we
much.
Certainly
so.
Do.
Not only do I
we
want it to be
happen.
True. Yeah, it should happen. I think you, the way like Kanye West and Kim Kardashian went into the White House and like got that other person the pardon. I feel like you, Don Jr., can go in, make a meeting with your dad and go, look, I know we're all dealing with Corona and there's a lot going on right now. But at the same time, maybe a presidential pardon for poor Joe Exotic, who's in there. And maybe Exotic, maybe we try to arrest Carol while we're at
it. Maybe not right now, but I could generally be for this just for the meme.
Yes.
And just for, frankly, watching the media reaction to this thing, because it would be pretty amazing to ultimately see that.
Well, so the president was asked about it yesterday after that got out. This is the exchange. Take a listen. Cut four.
For a long time, too. Go ahead.
One of the biggest rating hits of the coronavirus, aside from these briefings, has been a show on Netflix called Tiger King.
Yeah.
And the man who's the star of this is a former zoo owner who's serving a 22-year prison sentence. He's asking you for a pardon, saying he was unfairly convicted. Your son yesterday jokingly said that he was going to advocate for it. And I was wondering if you've seen the show and if you have any thoughts on pardoning Joe Exotic.
Which son? It must be Don.
It was.
I had a feeling it was Don. Is that what he said? I don't know. I know nothing about it. He has 22 years for what? What did he do?
He allegedly hired someone to murder an animal rights activist, but he said that he didn't do that. And he was.
You think he didn't do it? Are you on his side?
Are you
recommending a pardon?
No, I'm not advocating anything.
As a reporter, you're not allowed to do that. You'd be criticized by these. Would you recommend a pardon?
I'm not weighing in on time.
I don't think you would. Go ahead. Do you have a question?
Like that was a costume.
I'll take a look. Is that Joe Exotic? That's Joe Exotic.
I'm going to get back to your coronavirus.
Wait, that was Jim Acosta, you said?
Yeah, that when the president said, was you, so he's kind of busting on Acosta.
Why is Jim Acosta still there?
I know. And Acosta's like, I don't want to discuss this.
I don't want to talk about
grumpy.
This. This is too serious. I don't want to have any fun. I'm out of journalist internment camp. I got limited time before I have to go back. Yeah, did he get an early release from journalist internment camp so he could be there at the White House press briefing?
Yeah, it's I don't know. He's Acosta. I don't know if they talked to him, but I think his behavior has been better.
Yeah,
in my opinion, it's been more professional and that sort of thing, less self-involved.
You're just trying to see the best in people right now, Dawn. That's all it is.
I am. It's
which is
true.
Good. Which
but
is
the,
good.
But the briefings are good because you see, when have we ever seen the side of a tongue-in-cheek back and forth? It's clearly tongue-in-cheek. Some newspapers try to make it, some are outraged. Nobody's outraged. Everybody gets it. And it went viral and it's funny. You know, they're just having a lighthearted little moment there.
Right. Exactly. Checking in on social media, thanks to Cherry Hill Volvo. Sophia says, Rich, I've been working out every day since the start of the quarantine. I was 160 pounds and I got to 150. My goal is to get to 145 and be ready for summer if we have one. Working out also helped ease my anxiety and clear my mind. I highly recommend everyone work out while you're at home.
Awesome.
Very good. Thank
Congratulations.
You. That's excellent.
10 pounds.
Let's see now. There was also a question on that was asked of me on Twitter, which is why the hostility towards shaking hands? Can you explain? Sure. It's disgusting. Mario asked me this. Mario Jadis. Yeah, because people don't wash their hands and they're filthy and that's how you spread germs. And what do I got to shake your hand for? I'll pat you on the shoulder. How you doing? Good to see you. I pat you on the shoulder like that, like on the side. Like, hey, how you doing? Got to touch your dirty, filthy hand for. I don't understand. I've never understood that. So that's my answer to the issue, Mario. The president feels the same way, by the way. He doesn't like shaking hands. Let's see. And Nicola Di Giuseppe says, shaking hands in Italy, everyone kisses each other on both cheeks, even in business settings. That's got to go too, don't you think?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
come on.
You, instead of physically, you know, making the skin contact, you can just go, if that's your culture, just go, mwah, mwah, sort of do a little air kiss. But then that
butt slap
that would not go over well.
But thank you to Cherry Hill Volvo for sponsoring our check-in on social media. Remember, relationships matter, and they are there for you during this time. Serve you body shops open. Service shop is open. CherryHillVolvoCars.com. CherryHillVolvoCars.com. Bernie Sanders has ended his race for president. He is out of the race. He dropped out. Let's hear a little bit of Bernie dropping out. Cut number one.
Which takes me to the state of our presidential campaign. I wish I could give you better news, but I think you know the truth. And that is that we are now some 300 delegates behind Vice President Biden, and the path toward victory is virtually impossible. So while we are winning the ideological battle, and while we are winning the support of so many young people and working people throughout the country, I have concluded that this battle for the Democratic nomination will not be successful. And so today, I am announcing the suspension of my campaign. Please know that I do not make this decision lightly. In fact, it has been a very difficult and painful decision. Over the past few weeks, Jane and I, in consultation with top staff and many of our prominent supporters, have made an honest assessment of the prospects for victory. If I believed we had a feasible path to the nomination, I would certainly continue the campaign. But it's just not there.
It's not there.
I know
he's
that
out.
There may be.
Now, thank you, Bill. So this is key, right? Because Bernie getting out of the race, I know a lot of people question whether or not that is the end of Megaphone Bernie. Quite the contrary. In fact, tomorrow, Megaphone Bernie is going to be here to analyze Bernie dropping out of the race. So that's a programming note for you. All right?
Wow.
He's going to be our official political analyst in 2020, Megaphone Bernie.
He's going to comment on Bernie Sanders dropping out of the race.
Yeah, Megaphone Bernie is going to comment on Bernie dropping out of the race. What do you need to hear from Sarah Sanders for, like on Fox News? You could hear Megaphone Bernie comment on Megaphone Bernie dropping out of the race. You know what I'm saying?
True. It's a great point.
Yeah. I feel like there's a delay. Are we doing the show in China today, or what's going on? There's like a delay.
Well, we're all working. Everybody's on treadmills and ellipticals. So we're, you know, got to catch our breath.
I know.
So
it's
we're
like,
working
there's
out.
Like a, there's like a minute, like a thing. I told Scalish yesterday, I think there's a delay with the callers again, too.
Yeah, it's just slight.
There is, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can hear that, Greg, can you? Do you watch?
I cannot. I cannot hear it.
Yeah. Dawn, you hear it, though, right?
I do.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a delay.
It's just
like
a timing.
I ask a question, and it's like waiting.
It's like a heartbeat.
Yeah, it's like somebody is like on satellite. You know, when they do those stand-ups around the world, and you got to wait for them to get the signal to their ear thousands of miles away. That's what it sounds like. I don't know. Maybe we've got to like reset the circuits or something. might have to do that. Got to reset the circuits. Sometimes you got to do that. Bill de Blasio got heckled yesterday at Bronx Hospital. Bystanders were heckling him. I know this guy's such a schmuck. Everybody universally agrees this guy is such a putz. They really have just all come together to say that about him, which is good. It unites America around their hatred of Bill de Blasio. Take a listen.
People are dying. People are in hoods. People don't know what's going on. There's homeless people right here. Excuse me. Don't interrupt me.
We need more help in the hood.
I need a test, de Blasio.
I want to first thank Colonel Otto, Colonel Hernandez. Thank you so much.
Get us more testing for the Bronx. Don't talk to me, sir. Get us more testing for the Bronx. People are dying. People are in hoods. People don't know what's going on. There's homeless people right here. Excuse me. Don't interrupt me. We need more help in the hood.
Tell you what, I mean, people are mad. You know, the New York Post had a story. Coronavirus was spreading in New York City weeks before the first case, according to researchers. So the coronavirus was likely spreading in New York City as early as February, weeks before the Big Apple's first confirmed case, according to a report citing new research. Dr. Adriana Hage, a member of the NYU Grossman School of Medicine team studying the genomes of coronaviruses from city patients, told the New York Times that early findings indicate that the virus was in the city well before their first patient, March 1st. She and her team learned of the discrepancy by analyzing the different viral mutations between the city cases, according to the report. Certain viruses shared mutations not seen elsewhere. That's when you know you've had a silent transmission for a while, she said. A separate group of researchers from the ICANN School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, who were also studying the genomes of city coronavirus patients, determined early city cases were not linked to later ones, which they found came from Europe. 2 weeks after the first cases at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York, we started seeing viruses related to each other, according to Ana Silva Gonzalez, a member of the Mount Sinai team. The newer viruses closely mirrored those found in Europe. They found a period of untracked global transmission between late January to mid-February, according to their study. They analyzed 84 district COVID-19 genomes out of 800 confirmed cases treated at the Mount Sinai Health System. In a press release, the hospital said the results of their research indicate that the coronavirus came to New York City and other areas via untracked transmissions between the United States and Europe, with only limited introduction from China, where the virus originated. Only one of the 78 cases studied was infected with a virus that was a clear candidate for introduction from Asia, and that virus is most closely related to viral isolates from Seattle, Washington. Now, think about that for a moment. If the coronavirus was already in New York City by February, then that means it was probably here by January. The theory that this outbreak actually started in October, not in January, but started in China in October, kind of follows that thinking. Then it starts in China in October, and then it moves, of course, as the world goes, it moves around the world. By the time January came, by the time the president closed travel to China at the end of January, it was already way too late. It spread so much because I think this virus, either October or November, and then China started clamping down on it that early. And it was only until January when those whistleblowers started putting the information out there. But something that always bothered me about that was this idea. How could whistleblowers be putting information out there about the coronavirus in January if it had just started in January? That always troubled me. It was like, if it just started in January, there would be more... There'd be less of a need for the whistleblowers to start putting it out there because it'd be a slow build. By the time they were already blowing the whistle on this virus and doctors and lab patients, I think this thing was well out of the bag. I mean, I think this thing was spreading, like violently spreading. And then it goes to Europe and then it starts spreading there. It mutates and then comes to America. So you got it's getting hit on both shores here. Imagine if China had told us in October or November about the coronavirus. Imagine if they had told us then. That would have been something, right? I mean, imagine what we could have done. That is the problem here. We'll get to news after the break because I want to put a bow on this China thing real quick. Tucker Carlson did a great job last night of showing how Joe Biden has always been China's biggest cheerleader. And this is something to keep in mind here now about Joe Biden. Cut number 9.
As the threat from China grew larger and more threatening and much more obvious over the decades, Biden seemed to grow more accommodating to the Chinese government. In 2000, for example, the U.S.-China Trade Relations Act gave China normal trade status. What does that mean? Well, in her book, China RX, Rosemary Gibson, who we've had on the show, details how that piece of legislation opened the floodgates for Chinese drug imports. Within 3 years of the bill passing, America lost its last aspirin factory, its last vitamin C facility, its last penicillin plant. Our ability to make critically vital antibiotics in this country vanished, and that was a serious blow to our national security. And yet Joe Biden voted for that bill. He went on to oppose amendments to it that would have put pressure on China to release political prisoners and stop forced abortions. 11 years later, in 2011, Biden still didn't see the threat. In fact, he appeared to welcome it. That year, he said, quote, a rising China is a positive development, not only for China, but for America. The day that Biden gave that speech, millions of Americans had already lost their jobs. They've been shipped overseas to China. Chinese students were already flooding America's schools and research labs, crowding out Americans, stealing the data and information that in the end would boost the Chinese economy to where it stands today, larger than ours. It's hard to believe Biden said that, but it wasn't the only time he did. Here was Biden last May on the campaign trail.
China is going to eat our lunch. Come on, man. They're not bad folks, folks. But guess what? They're not a they're not competition for us.
Just 2 months ago, when it was already clear to everyone who was watching that China had lied to the world in ways that hurt the world about a deadly outbreak of the Wuhan coronavirus, Biden was still flacking for the Chinese government. Watch this.
You know, we have right now a crisis with the coronavirus emanating from China. In moments like this, this is where the credibility of a president is most needed, as he explains what we should and should not do. This is no time for Donald Trump's record of hysterical xenophobia, and fear-mongering to lead the way instead of science.
Xenophobia! It seems almost antique.
There you go.
Why? Right,
thank you very much, Bill. 855-839-1210. So let's give you the latest on New Jersey. We get back. I'll tell you about the governor's edicts, Mouse Murphy, what his latest lockdowns are. If you're in the construction industry, your life's going to get a whole lot harder. I'm sorry to tell you that, but it's true. More lockdowns, less freedom in New Jersey. Is this really how we're going to stop this virus? I think it's insane, but he's drunk on power like so many of these other governors. And we'll get to the news. We'll give you all the latest updates. So do not go away.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.